Blog Talk Radio.
And live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, this is Dr. John Stamey, and I want to welcome you to the craziest, coolest show on the internet. This is Scarycast, the original Monday Night Scarycast. It's so good to be here with almost everybody. We got lots of explanations, lots of great things going on, and lots of fun. We got a wonderful, wonderful guest. And of course, starting it off, the queen of Scarycast is here, the one, the only, Robin McCray. How are you doing tonight, Robin?
I'm good. Glad to be here. I'm excited about tonight's guest.
I am really excited just about the show. We got so much cool stuff going on. It's great. And from Houston, Texas, the one, the only, the Grinch, the pirate. No, it's Kyler Smith. How are you doing tonight, Kyler?
Hey, everybody. I'm currently stuck outside of my apartment right now because I may or may not have forgotten my keys, but it's okay.
Oh, my God. Kyler. Trey's getting showered full. Kyler's stuck outside his house.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Kyler watched me make a cash deal with a Russian arms dealer from Uruguay this weekend. Kyler,
is
that
something
the truth?
Should be on here?
Sure. And his name's Boris. His name's Boris. I mean, what more can you ask for? Kyler, did I do it?
Yeah, sounds worse than it actually was, but he's really cool.
But Boris is from Uruguay. He's Russian, and he's an arms dealer, and I did. It was great. And I did it in a Food Lion parking lot in Chocowinney, North Carolina. No arms deal has ever been done before in Chocowinney, North Carolina. I mean, nobody even knows where it is.
May I make a comment on that?
Sure.
Nobody in this show should ever be left unattended. Okay.
No, Kyler was there.
None
he
of you people should be left unattended.
That is exactly right, because we have too much fun. Now, anyway, Dr. Trey Dunaway, I'm getting pretty particular with my hall passes, but he's got the best excuse for not showing up that I have ever seen. About 45 minutes ago, he sent me a text, and it said, "John, my truck was used as cover in a gunfight at a Charlotte gas station. For real, my truck is being processed as a crime scene. I don't know when I can leave. Don't know if I'll make the 9 p.m. start for Scarycast. I am fine, and so is Janie. They are lousy shots."
Well, it shows the importance of this show that in the middle of a gunfight, he was worried about making it at 9 o'clock for Scarycast.
You know, it just does, because Dr. Trey takes his position as the Surgeon General of Scarycast and as a member of our panel, very seriously, he does. And he reminds me of that all the time. And I'm actually going to get to see him Friday, and I can't wait to see the truck. And we're going to have pictures of me, Trey, and Janie in the truck. I mean, and we're going to post
crazy.
Them all over Scarycast. It's going to be great. So anyway.
Yeah, I have to look on the internet and see if I can find out about it.
Well, I know. It probably won't be on there till tomorrow. I mean, I don't know if they're dead or not, but, you know, whatever. The people in the gunfight. I don't know, but I mean, it's pretty crazy. So, Robin, I tell you what, I will send these to you, and if you would distribute them to our guest and to Kyler and whoever you think might enjoy.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. That's right. But anyway, that's the way
it is.
From now
on, I'm putting you all in bubbles. You're all going into bubbles. You will never be allowed out. And you will have guards because none of you are able to be left unattended.
That is exactly right. And that's why we have so much fun. And that's why every Monday night is my favorite hour and a half of the week. It is Scary Cast. We get to come on and be our crazy selves. So anyway.
Now I'm frightened to be here.
That's right. Well, we're so glad you're here because there has to be an adult to supervise us children.
Somebody,
right,
has, yeah, somebody has to be in charge of you people. Good Lord.
Exactly.
That's exactly
Did I
right.
forget the
so
safety
anyway.
Memo? We do not play in gunfire. Did nobody get my memos?
No, we didn't. All right.
And we don't
okay,
make
so
deals
now.
With arms dealers. Good God.
Sure, Boris is cool. And then Kyler and I watched Rocky and Bullwinkle and saw Boris and Natasha. It was great. I mean, it was like the most fun. It's like, what more can you say? Anyway, all right, let's get on. We've got an incredible show tonight. Dr. Trey is going to miss it, but he'll get some more next week. One of my very best friends is Dr. Dennis Plutala. He has got his doctorate in piano performance from the University of Nebraska. I met him when he was a master's student at North Carolina School of the Performing Arts in Winston-Salem. He became, back in the day, one of my old drinking buddies. I mean, he's a dude from Russia. I mean, what more can you say? We drank vodka, we laughed, and he played piano, and we had the best time in the world because I am a professional musician as well, and he is one unbelievable pianist. And so we formed the Maria Udina Society about 14 years ago, and we still do some performances of his, and he is our artist in residence. He is truly one of the most accomplished pianists I have ever heard. And so this afternoon, I hadn't talked with him in about 2 weeks, and I called him and yelled at him. I mean, that's what I do. I mean, what are you going to do, the Russian piano god? All you can say to him is, you haven't called me. He said, John, I have a file for you to listen to. And he sent it to me. It was horrible because he had forgotten to put the microphone. He had the microphone in his jacket pocket while he was playing. So then he found one where it was laying on the piano. And so what we are going to listen to for 4 minutes before we have this incredible guest is there was a Broadway musical that ran in 1924 called No, No, Nanette. It's been redone, remade, and it has a very, very famous song. And in fact, the song was so famous that Doris Day recorded it in 1950 in a movie of the same name. It's written by Vince Yeomans and Irving Cesaro. And what we're going to listen to is Dr. Denis Plutalov took the great Russian composer Dmitri Shostakovich's rendition of this. It was an orchestral version. It's about 4 minutes long. And he set it to piano. And I got it. I think it's one of the most incredible things I've ever heard. Now, I complained to Dennis. I heard two wrong notes. He's a sloppy performer. But you get him in the studio, and he is beyond bound. In fact, Dennis is going to be doing the entire soundtrack for Dracula's Guest, which is going to be filmed in March of this year up in Havelock, North Carolina, at the Nightmare Factory. And it's going to be a lot of fun. Dennis is going to come down from Nebraska, and he is going to do the soundtrack of this silent film. It's going to be incredible. So if everybody would bear with me for 4 minutes and 5 seconds, I want to play for you one of the most incredible live performances I have ever heard. If we can get it going. Now come on. There we go. And please enjoy this song. Thank you. I think the crowd liked it. That is in honor of, that is how Maria Udina would have played it, the greatest Russian pianist of all time, who we always pay homage to, and the great arrangement of Dmitri Shostakovich's T for Two. And as I said, every Christmas, all over Eastern Europe, they are playing that. That has become basically the Christmas national anthem. That's just, you know, it's wonderful to learn about cultures from Dennis, Dr. Dennis Plutalov. He'll be back again soon. So anyway, thanks for allowing me to play that. I thought it was so cool. Now tonight, Robin McCrae, the Queen of Scary Cast, is going to introduce our guest because he's a friend of hers. And she's got some very interesting friends, some people that really, really we enjoy and we learn so much from. So, Robin, the floor is yours.
Thanks. This is a very dear friend of mine. He goes by the nickname of Darkwoods. And I met him through a mutual friend, Duke Sullivan, who owns and runs and operates World Bigfoot Radio. And we started talking, and he has got some incredible things that goes on at his property. And his partner, the two of them together, are just astronomical to begin with. Two of the kindest people you'll ever meet in your life. I just love them. But they get some great encounters, and they're doing it right. Okay, these are, like, I don't bring a lot of people on the show. I have occasionally, but these two are one of the ones that do it right, and that's why I wanted to get them on or get him on here, and eventually I'd like to get her on as well, because they're not just out there getting experiences. They're not just out there getting contact. They're doing it the correct way, and we've talked about this before. There's a right way and a wrong way. If you do it the wrong way, you're going to get a negative experience that may not only traumatize you and them, the cryptids, but you're not going to get a repeat chance, okay? What Darkwoods does, as well as his partner, they interact. And between the two of them, they have a mutual respect, not only for the Bigfoot and the Dogman there, of which both the Dogman and the Bigfoot there get along. And some of the photos he's gotten, they're all fantastic, but lead me to believe that they're also interbreeding like they used to do at my place in Michigan. But there's a mutual respect between him and his partner and these cryptids. They've got a very, very good relationship with them. They're getting closer all the time. And his photos are just tremendous. Like, I have the utmost respect for both of these people. I love them to death. But they're like, again, they're doing it the right way. Nobody's getting hurt. There's no aggression. They are getting more and more contact, more and more experiences, and it's all based on a mutual respect between them and these cryptids. So I'm going to let him talk to you more about it because I don't want to give anything away. But he's tremendous. He has come so far in the last year, I can't even tell you. They both have. It's just wonderful, the contact they get over there. In fact, if Pat and I ever get back to Michigan like we want to go over where they're at and take a look and see how things are going and talk to them and visit with them.
Well, that sounds great, Robin. And I'd like to introduce to the Scarycast world, Darkwoods. How you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm doing great. Thanks for the introduction, Robin. And hey, to all the listeners out there.
Yeah, we're glad to have you here.
Absolutely.
I'm super happy to be here.
All right, so tell us, let's start from the beginning. How did your experiences begin occurring up there? Because you're in Indiana, correct?
No, I'm much further north. I'm up in the northern part of Wisconsin, just under the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
Okay, the reason I said that is because you're from a 317 area code. That's an Indiana area code, right?
Oh, that's weird. My area code is 715.
Yeah, I was going to say that's not the right one I've got.
You come through. You are coming through at 317. That's amazing.
Are you sure that's
all
not
right,
Kyler?
So, no, that's not Kyler. Kyler is 541. All right, well, you know, some more spooky stuff going on Scarycast. That's what we can say.
Could be a different provider is sending it out that way to that area code before it hits you guys.
So anyway, tell us how everything got started. Is that a good question, Robin?
Well, everything got started. I used to live in northern Illinois, and I met Primocry, who is my girlfriend. And I've been coming up here for vacation until I actually moved up here in 2019. Oh. I had an incident in 2018 where I had a top of a tree break off and go through 40 feet of woods and slammed on top of my blazer and smashed the roof completely down, destroyed the body mounts and all kinds of stuff. And there's no way that a branch like that could break off of a tree and go through a bunch of woods and hit my car and land linear to the truck, lengthwise with the truck. And it hit so hard that it turned one of my body mounts inside out. And needless to say, I ended up having to get a rental car. And during that time when I went home, I just had this overwhelming feeling that I needed to research about Bigfoot, which is strange because I knew the name, but I never thought much about Bigfoot. And I think they implanted that in my head. And there's another side story that goes along to this that I'll talk about in a little bit here. But ever since I got back to Illinois and I had my truck towed back down and actually fixed it. I used a 2.5-ton ram to pull the roof back into place and fix it. It's still driving. I'm driving it now. When the truck got smacked and I went home and I had this overwhelming desire to research stuff on Bigfoot, I started getting into it big time, and that's when I actually came across the cryptid known as Dogman. And at first I thought that was a joke, that couldn't be possible. And later on in the conversation, you'll know that I realized that Dogman are real. But needless to say, the incident that happened with the truck, this is the way we see it, is that Primocry lives here by herself with her son, and there's Sasquatch around this area, and they've been watching her for a period of time. They've been overseeing her, protecting her, we believe. And I came into the picture, and I was a new kid on the block. And so I think maybe they didn't know what I was about or whatever. And I'm not sure if smacking my truck down with a tree was something to test me to see how I would react, or if they were upset because a male came in, because there was no male here. And I believe there was a male Sasquatch in a clan of Sasquatches here that was keeping an eye and possibly making sure she was safe. So until I came back with the truck fixed and then I moved up here is when I started getting different reactions. But it's only natural because Sasquatches have emotional values like we do. They are a type of people. And they also, as far as emotions go, you know how we have emotions and they're really strong. You could jack theirs up 100% stronger. And I believe the truck incident was maybe a protection factor until they got used to me. And after all that situation transpired, now we all get along. We coexist with them because I don't pressure them. I don't do stupid things around them or go searching for them. We just coexist and we enjoy being peaceful, the forest, doing things. We do a lot of things on the land here. We have a garden. We clean up a lot of areas. And I think they respect a lot of the things that we do here. Then that's why I believe now that they have a trust with us with me especially. But that's how it all started.
That's an amazing story. Robin,
yeah,
do you have any comments you'd like to make?
I couldn't hear you, John. You're talking to me?
Yeah, I was saying, do you have any comments you'd like to make?
Okay, because it blanked out. Yeah, I mean, we have talked, both Primal Cry, Dark Woods, and myself, we've talked extensively. And it's just really magical what goes on there. And again, it goes back to when you do it right, when you do it with a mutual respect from both sides, not only the cryptids, but from them, you get this kind of interaction. And it's not just talk. He has the photos to back it up. I've seen them. They're incredible. And in fact, I saw one he had up there today, and it was of a dog, man. And you could see like the third eyelid and everything on it. There's like a film that can cross over it. It's just absolutely, literally incredible. It is. I don't know any other way to do it.
Yep, that's some information that most researchers don't know about, and I made it public today, actually, and yesterday.
Yeah, the photo was fantastic. And the thing is that there is constant interaction, and he's absolutely 100% right. I mean, as we know, I mind speak. I've been mind speaking with the ones that are on his property for a long time now. And they actually generally care about him and Primal Cry. They actually do. You know, she goes out to the garden and they absolutely love it. Now, that being said, you know, you always have to exercise caution. You can't get so comfortable that you let your guard down 100%. But even with, and he's 100% right, they are a type of people. That is what genetically they are. You're looking at a Sasquatch, which is a human hybrid. It's a human cross with an ET. When you get to your dogman, you're looking at a dogman that's canine, human, and ET. They're all still a people. They're a type of people. Maybe not our people, but they are people. And so, you know, if you're going to go like into a new town, you're going downtown or whatever, you're going to go out and you're walking in the middle of a fair or whatever, and you've got all these people, you're going to exercise caution there too because you don't know what people you're out with. It's not any different when you're dealing with these cryptids. But what they're doing over there works. And there is a certain level of trust. And like I said, the pictures speak for themselves. I mean, what can you say when you're seeing this, not only is the information that he has when we talk, from my experiences and from what the dogman and the Sasquatch have talked and taught me, what they're telling him is accurate. He would have no way of knowing this information if he wasn't getting it from them, if he wasn't experiencing it. And then that's all supported in the photos. It's just incredible. It really and truly is. And now they're starting, when I talk to Primal Cry, she's even starting as well as Dark Woods. They're starting to pick up the emotions off of these cryptids, which is wonderful. They're starting to realize, she contacted me one day and she said, I think either someone's pregnant or they've had a baby. And she was 100% right. You know, so they're really getting in tune with them. It's wonderful over there.
Yeah, she's a lot better at the emotions on that aspect than I am. I'm still trying to learn that, feeling the energy.
You're doing good. You guys have come so far in the last year. It's mind-blowing.
I appreciate it, Robin.
You
know, I mean,
Robin would know.
Well,
yes,
I don't know about
does.
That, but I do know when I first started talking with them, and we had met because of World Bigfoot Radio. He would be on there in the chat rooms. It's on every Sunday night at 9 o'clock on YouTube under World Bigfoot Radio, and he would be in the chat rooms, and so would Primal Cry, and we would all talk through there. And then he reached out and said, hey, could we ever talk sometime? And they don't need me. They've got it going. They're going great on their own. You know, I just think sometimes it's helpful to have somebody else that has experienced the same things that you're experiencing, because this stuff can make you really doubt your sanity at times. I mean, it can.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how long you've been doing it. So they didn't need me for anything. They're doing fantastic. All they needed was somebody that could say, yep, I've been through it. You know, what you're dealing with, it's legit. You know, and that's fine. We're all supposed to be here for each other. We learn from each other. You know, nobody has all the answers. It takes all parties to be able to figure any of this out, and we're never going to get the whole story.
Yep, nobody's an expert, that's for sure.
No, none. That was the first thing I said to him. That was the first thing I said to you, I think, when we talked the first time, was I said, off the bat, I am not an expert. If anybody tells you they're an expert in this field, run.
Yeah.
Like, don't even stick around. Run.
But there are some people out there, and I'm not going to toot my own horn, but there are other people out there that definitely have a lot of knowledge in this because of personal experience. And their information is invaluable because we're all putting the pieces of the puzzle together.
Exactly. And the other key point, too, is we're all dealing with different individuals. None of these things are the same. There's no two alike. They don't look alike. They don't behave alike. They don't have the same mannerisms.
Mm-hmm.
They're as individualized as our people are. So every experience you have with every different individual is different. You know, it's like tonight I went to go bring our Pyrenees in the house, and there was one standing in the bushes. He seemed quite big, and he was wheezing and wheezing and wheezing. I asked him if he was sick. Did he need to be healed? And he said no, he was fine. But I felt so bad for him because I could hear him. That's the first one that, I mean, we've heard him cough. We've heard him sneeze, you know, from the bushes or whatever. But this one, he was like literally wheezing. I felt awful. I told Pat about it tonight, and I said, double check, because they told me that he doesn't need to be healed. So Pat checked with them, and they said, no, he doesn't. But if he gets bad enough, they'll let me know. So, but again, every single one is different. You've got, you know, some that have like this or some that like that. You know, they've all got different quirks. They've all got different mannerisms. And when you get into a situation like Darkwoods has, you're looking at Bigfoot and the Dogmen, all of which are different. Dogmen are a whole different personality mindset than the Bigfoot. Doesn't mean that's a bad thing. It doesn't mean that's bad at all. But now he's got both there. And, you know, you try to deal with each one on an individual basis, but you learn which one's likes and dislikes, and what is this one's quirks? You know, I have some that when they come into the yard, I know they want me to just ignore them. They don't want me to, you know, if they want to interact, they'll let me know. I have others that they want me to interact with them. It goes the same way where he's at. There's one that follows Primal Cry all over the place. There's a female down there that just loves her. I think it's a Dogman, you know, but and there's always the Sasquatch are walking around too, but they love her. And then when he goes out in the woods, there's some young males that follow him everywhere, as well as some of the older ones. So, I mean, you know, I mean, they're all over the place. But again, each one is an individual. Each one has its own quirks, likes and dislikes, and behaviors. And both Darkwoods and Primal Cry are now at that level where they're starting to pinpoint which one is this way, which one is that way. It's just, it's really a great thing.
Yep. And I believe the clan, the juveniles that are around here, they have a sense of humor, and they played some jokes on me a couple. And then I do have a footprint that's 23 inches long, a beautiful footprint that shows a mid-torso break in the foot. And in a photo, I believe, of the same Sasquatch, who I believe is the alpha male of the clan, and he's around 13 to 14 foot tall.
Yeah, he says his name is Beloga.
Beloga. Okay, good.
Write
it
down because they don't always let me remember. B-O-L-O-G-A.
Okay, I got that one.
Because when you were talking, when you were talking, he popped in. He says, I am, and then he gave me his name. I said, you better tell me how to spell this thing. Like, you know, their voices sometimes. Well, their voices are really deep and guttural sometimes. And so, you know, you don't know that if you're pronouncing it right or how is it supposed to be spelled or, you know. And they do have an alphabet. They have their own alphabet. It doesn't look like ours, but they do have it. They can read. They can write. You know, they're human.
That's true. And they're I would say they're ancient people, too. They've been around a very long time.
Yeah, yeah. They were here, I think, before us.
Yeah.
I know the one in the ones in the Ketchum study that they did the genomes on dated back 15,000 years. You know, but is there some that could be before that? I'm not going to say it's impossible. I don't say anything is impossible after all the stuff I've seen.
That's true, but 15,000 years, anything after that would probably be a derivative of the original, you know?
Yeah. Why don't you tell us some of the pranks that they played?
Oh, well, I'll start out first with the bonfire incident. So where I live up here in Wisconsin, I live in the Chicamagoan National Forest, and I could drive 40 minutes to work, and I never leave the forest. Find an open area of land out here is impossible. And I have woods 360 around the house. And we have a bonfire ring about 150 yards away from the house in the woods. There's a little area that was cleared out. It used to be a logging trail, and it's all overgrown and everything now. But we set up a nice bonfire over there, and we all decided to go out there. It was January. We had about 3 feet of snow. Typical for us to go out there and roast marshmallows and things and have a good. So we were out there, me, Primacry, her son, and our family dog. She's a nice Labrador and all. And up here at night, people don't go outside, not like out in the city, because there's too many predators. There's wolves here that you could put a saddle on and ride. They're huge, massive wolves. Coyotes are real big. There's too many predators, so people stay indoors usually at night. But, you know, occasionally people will have a fire on their property and have good times, and that's what we were doing. And we were sitting out there, and the way the property is, behind the house, you could walk about 15 feet to hit a river. And on the other side of the river is Powell Marsh, and that's thousands and thousands of acres of wildlife marsh and forest island in the marsh. And it sounded like right across the river there was a coyote call, but it didn't sound right. It sounded like someone was imitating it. And I told my girlfriend, I said, who the heck would be out there in the swamp at night? And there's no one that would be there. So I just thought that was strange. And when I lived in Illinois, I worked on a farm, a 129-acre farm, and sometimes you had to yell across acres to get your buddy's attention for something. So we developed this call blast that I do, and it's a very loud oof sound. And I could do it to where you could hear it echo through the woods forever. It's super loud.
Wow. Is it appropriate? This is Dr. John. Is it appropriate for you to try to do it on our show?
I could try to do it. It probably won't echo. It'll probably mute out a little bit.
Well, just don't blow our ears away and give it a go.
Set the phone down and then
it. There you go. But you just gather up breath and you compress it, and then you go, super loud. But
oh, wow.
Here you could hear it. You could hear it across the field, you know. So anyway, I did that. Seconds later, all of a sudden I hear that same coyote sound on the other side of the river behind the house in the woods. And then another 3 seconds later, it sounded like we were surrounded. You know, we have white pine, which is really huge, tall trees, big around, and we could hear knocking, whap, 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 like 3 times all over the place. It sounded like we were surrounded. And this kept going on for a while. It was chaos. And Primacry decided to get up, and she said, I don't think it's safe out here. We need to get in the house. So she took her and her son and the dog in the house, and I told her I was going to stay back and listen, you know, to see if I could figure out more of whatever was going on. And time we had headlamps on, and I just bought brand new batteries for the headlamps. Sure enough, when they left, my headlamp died instantly. It just died. Batteries got drained in it.
Yeah, they drained them.
I was like, well, I got a bonfire going because it's going pretty good. And about 10 seconds later, the bonfire dwindled down to a candle light, you know. And I'm like, what the heck is going on? So now I'm out there by myself in the woods, and it's pitch black. I mean, up here, there's no street lights, nothing. You see billions of stars. They go all the way to the ground. But I'm out there in the pitch black, and I'm leaning my head forward, and I'm trying to listen to hear if I could hear footsteps in the snow or anything. And all of a sudden, I heard the sound of what sounds like a grouse. It wasn't a grouse because it was instantly fast, and it was super precise, and it was super loud. Like me talking to you right now, the sound of that grouse would override me talking to you. That's how loud it was. But to me, it sounded like wet fingers precisionally drumming on their chest constantly. And this lasted about a minute and a half to 2 minutes. It's just like, just drumming fingers on the chest. And
they probably were.
What the heck? Yeah, I was like, what the heck? Because if it was a grouse, you know, I'd been spooked by a grouse going in the woods a lot because they take off right at the last minute. And you'll hear the drumming sound. Why? But it fades away when they get away from you. This didn't fade away. It started off fast, loud, and it was consistent all the way through until it finally stopped. And right before it finally stopped, my mind was thinking, I got this impression of like an ape beating its chest. And I was thinking, oh, are they challenging me or something? Because I'm the only one out there now. So all the hair rose up on my head, and I'm like, I'm out of here. So I walked away. And when I got back to the house, Primacry was on the steps, you know, concerned about me being out there. And I seen her, and I said, you should have heard what I just heard. And she said, you should see how your face looks. And I was like, well, you have no idea. But that was my introduction. And I believe those Sasquatch were the juvenile ones. Because I've heard a lot of times they try to mimic. They're very good at mimicking animals.
Oh, they're 100% precise.
Yeah. And even chainsaw.
And they can, and they can, even like a person's voice.
Mm-hmm.
You can't tell it's not that person. They did that. My ex-husband was out in the woods. This is back when we were married, and he was out there hunting. I was in the house with the kids, and he came in just completely livid and yelling at me, and I was like, what is wrong with you? And he says, you knew I was out there hunting. You're out there in the woods talking to me, and you scared all the deer. And I said, I never left the house. And the kids told him, you know, why are you mad at mom? She never left the house. She was making dinner the whole time. Like, she was right here. He said, I've known you for 15 years. I know what your voice sounds like. And so after that, the new house rule was for the kids. If I call you, but you don't physically see me, this is how precise they are, then you don't come. I don't care if I tell you I got bit by a snake and I'm dying. You don't come if you don't physically see me. Nobody could go by voices anymore. You had to physically see that person. I said, so if I'm back there screaming, I'm being attacked, whatever, you don't come unless you see me. And nobody's going to get grounded. Nobody's going to get in trouble because it's that precise. You literally cannot tell. I mean, it's uncanny. Yep. I don't know how they do it. Mimic animals, mimic machinery, voices. It doesn't matter what it is. I was out on my front porch one night, and I was doing Dave Scott's show, Spaced Out Radio, and I was sitting on the porch, and often, and I knew they were out there. They're always out there. And they were in the bushes, walking around in the bushes, and I heard what sounded like somebody sacking a metal pie pan. There was nothing metal over there. But it literally sounded like someone thacking their finger on a metal pie pan, and they would thack it one time, wait 5 seconds, one time, wait 5 seconds. And they did it like 8 times in a row. I reached over and I knocked on the banister 3 times. And as soon as I did, they immediately repeated the 3 knocks back. And then they went back to the one knock or the one, you know, pop on the metal, wait 5 seconds thing again. So I did it 4 times. They did 4 times back. But again, how they make the noises, I couldn't tell you. I know, you know, they do it a variety of ways, whether it's on their chest, whether it's their mouth, you know, whether it's their vocal cords. But it's just the precision in it is astronomical.
It's like a machinery. It's just insane.
I know.
Super precise.
But yeah,
one thing
it
to note,
is crazy.
I mean, when they were knocking on those trees, they kept knocking three times. And guess what? There was three of us out there, excluding the dog.
Yeah, it really, it has a, it means something. I was out one night. I was laying in bed, and one of them kept telling me to come out in the backyard, come out in the backyard. So I walked out on my deck, and I said, okay, I'm out here. What do you want? I heard six knocks right in a row, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And I was like, okay. They waited a minute. They did it again, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Finally, I said, all right, what is that supposed to mean? I don't know what you mean. And it says, we are one of six. And I said, what does that mean? They said,
wow.
There are six of us. And I was like, oh, okay. Now, I don't believe that that means that every time they do, like, the three knock or the four knock, it means there's three or four
right.
of them. But in that particular situation, that's what they were talking about. You know, when they did it when I was outside, they did the three knock and the four knock because I did it first and they imitated it. But a lot of times
right.
you hear that. You know, sometimes you'll hear one pop and that's it. But all these things that they do, all these noises, it's all part of communication, whether they're trying to communicate with you or whether they are – making these noises for others in their clan, you know, to alert them to different things. You know, like a lot of people hear the owl call or the dove call. We had one when we first moved here that would make a whippoorwill call at night. And I would get up, it would do it. I could hear it through the window. And I would get up and I'd go sit. My window is only like 2 foot off the ground and it's like 5 foot tall. And so I'd go and I'd sit at the base of the window. And I look across the road because we live on a real dirt road and it's all woods. And I could see in the tree line there. But, you know, whippoorwills are, my understanding is they're a ground bird. I mean, I don't know a lot about them, but my understanding from the people that do know about them told me that they're a ground bird. So the next night when he did it, I'm like, okay, the whippoorwill noise is not on the ground. It's on the tree. And it's 9 foot up in the air. And then it would go, he was pacing up and down the tree line. And he would do this for a couple of hours every night. He'd pace up and down that tree line doing the whippoorwill call. And I would make an attempt to do it back. I didn't sound as good as he did. But this would go on every night for I don't know how long. And then he would get bored. He eventually, you'd hear the whippoorwill call and you could hear him as he was walking down the road. And it just went down, the noise went down the road with him. But it was consistently at the same height up and down the tree line. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. They've made the noises from the animals that are here, whether it's the cats, the dogs, the pigs, whatever. You know, they just, there's nothing they can't imitate. And now, because occasionally I'll do podcasts outside because a lot of them are at night. And that way my family can sleep. All the dogs are quiet because they're sleeping. And I'll go out and sit out on the porch. And my next door neighbor on the one side has a semi. And we have got all these bushes and giant pine trees in between the property, so I can't see it, but I know he's over there. And the first night I was out there, they would take, it sounded like a lead pipe hitting metal. And I thought, what is going on? And again, I was for Dave Scott's show, and it starts our time, it's midnight. It's 9 o'clock his time, Canadian time. But it sounded like a lead pipe hitting something metal. And it would do that on and off the entire time I did the show. And there was nobody outside there. I mean, you're talking midnight to 3 o'clock in the morning. There was nobody out there. And every time I go out there, now it does it. I have no idea what they're doing. There's nothing over there. I mean, he's got the semi, yeah, but I don't know what they're using. But they've learned that noise. It sounded like somebody would take a hammer. But they figured out how to imitate that noise now because every now and then they'll come over here and they'll be in the bushes on the other side of the house and I'll get that noise as well. I mean, it's just uncanny.
That's a great story, Rob.
Yeah, it is a good story. But with those juveniles that I heard do that false coyote call, I heard a lot of times the juveniles are learning how to do calls, so it wasn't really on par. And then when I did that oof sound, I don't know if they thought I was another foot or something, but I think I interrupted their hunting because Duke said that they'll do coyote calls to call in coyotes because they'll eat the coyotes. And I don't know if I messed up their hunt there or whatever, so they came to investigate us. But, boy, the next morning I was all hot and bothered to go out there, and I swear I would have found tracks. We had 3 feet of snow. No problem, you know. I searched all around the area. We were at the bonfire and a half mile back up to the river and everything. There is not a single track anywhere. And so I suspect that because of the way the forest is here, that they came across the river and up into the backyard solely through the tree.
Oh, that's very possible. I mean, they levitate as well, but they would, you know, you would think because of the sheer weight of them and the mass that they are, that they could not be in the trees the way they are. And that's, you know, logically that makes sense. Realistically, it doesn't seem to matter.
Yeah, when you got 150-foot white pines that are huge, that will definitely hold 1,000 pounds of weight.
Yeah, I mean, we have a bunch of them here, but one here have a boy that his name is Zerky. And I think Zerky's probably 5 or 6 now, but at the time he was only like 2 or 3. And he would play in our front yard in these trees, and John's seen him because he was not put, but he saw the whole tree line when he was here. It's all bushes and these giant pine trees. And Zerky would play through there every single night. And he did that for about 2 years.
Robin, may I interrupt you and tell you,
yeah,
and tell the kind of fantastic thing that we saw? I was there with the WWE superstar maestro, Rob Kellum. And you had very graciously offered for Rob and I to stay at your house during one of the Lizard Man festivals that I was running in Bishopville. So we got there and we went in and had some of your, here's a plug for Robin's recipe.
He loves
your marvelous Key West Sloppy Joes. Oh my God. It was the best stuff. Anyway. So we went outside after dinner and I noticed there was movement in the tree area or the tree line. Basically, there's a tree line between each of the properties, you know, and so there's some trees and some bushes. And I looked, and I said, something is not right. Because, you know, Mr. Darkwoods, when wind blows, trees move back and forth, don't they?
Yep.
They do, and what happened was this tree line between on the left, as I'm looking to the road, the tree line on the left was shaking. That's not the way things work when
No.
They were shaking. And then with the tree line on the other side of her property was dead quiet. And I immediately said, well, something's not right here. We discussed it a little bit and, you know, this and that and this and that. But no, I mean, I saw something that was extremely unusual. I'm from the mountains of North Carolina. I've seen trees blow all my life. But, you know, never have I seen a shaking. I mean, it was like they were being shaken. All right, Robin, back to you. But I wanted to share that. I think it's important.
Yeah. Well, Zerky plays in that whole tree line. And actually, there's all these shrub bushes in there on top of these giant pine trees, and they gutted it out in there. Like, you couldn't tell from the outside, but if you looked into it, it looked like a tunnel through there, and he would play in there all the time. In fact, when Igor was here, Igor went in there, and I kept saying, will you get out of there? They're going to get mad because you're in there, because the mom would sit at the one end by I think it was her that was shaking the bushes at John, and they got mad because Igor was in there. But anyway, Zerky runs back and forth through there. He kept climbing up one of our trees that was there, and he would get up on top of that tree and hoot and holler and play every single night. He finally, that boy, after 2 years, got big enough, he snapped it, and most of the tree came down. But you would be amazed, you know, how much they are in trees. And myself included, people forget. Look up. Instead of looking at ground, you know, on the ground or looking at eye level, look up. You know, we had a massive tree in Michigan, and they love that thing. They climb that like crazy. You could see where they would climb it because where their feet and their hands would go on these branches, the bark was stripped away or worn away. So you could see exactly where they put each hand and each foot. and they would play it. Yep. The whole bottom of the ground would be littered with footprints. And it was right next to a wire fence that used to be a hot wire fence, but it hadn't been turned on in years. And they actually, to go from one property to the next, they lifted the wire. This is how smart. They lifted the wire up, looped it over a branch to make a big opening so they could go in and out of it easy.
Wow. I've seen up here where the trees are, the big trees, you could see where branches up on the top of the tree canopies are busted and a lot of bugs missing. And you can see through the trees the path that they are taking to get through the forest in the trees to get a stationary area where they could observe the house.
Now, have you guys noticed yet anything being moved around?
No, actually, they do not touch nothing. Primocry's son actually set a toy outside by the garden because we have a small fire ring in that area. And,
yeah.
He set that down, and nothing's never touched it. But we have gotten gifts, rocks that appeared out of nowhere.
Yep.
And we take them in the garden and put them, because we got a gazebo thing in the garden. We put them up on the shelves.
Yeah. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah,
have you checked your roof? They love,
yeah,
for whatever reason. Work. Have you found any rocks or anything up there yet?
Nah, it's a pretty steep A-frame roof. It's got the metal type of roof as well. So.
Also, it wouldn't stay up anyway.
It wouldn't stay up anyway. But I'll tell you, recently, the dogman encounters have been off the charts up here, and they're the ones who seem to want to make first contact. And I could actually tell you of an experience I had where I had either a mind speak or a thought implant into my mind with the dogman that was a very unusual, unrealistic type of encounter, if you guys don't mind.
Yeah.
No, please. Darkwoods, that's why we're here. We are here to hear your stories and some of Robin's and one or two of mine with Robin. So please go ahead.
I appreciate that. I just want to be respectful to you guys. First time I've been on a radio show, so that's cool. So anyway, next to our property, there is a logging road, and they went back towards the river and logged out a small section of woods. So up here, when you have a lot of pines and woods, birches, poplar, whatnot, there's always a bunch of pine needles and stuff in the pines on the forest floor. So it's hard to find tracks. But because they logged out the area back here, there was a lot of sand and dirt mixed where I could go back there because I'm a hunter and I look for tracks for deer, game trails and stuff. And one day in the spring, I went out there to check for tracks, doing my normal thing. Cryptids was the last thing on my mind. And I just went out there to have some fun and enjoy tracking. And when I went out to the area where the logging opened up in the forest a little bit, as soon as I stepped in that area, all of a sudden I never experienced this in my life, but I had this feeling that something was intruding into my mind and saying that we're over here. And it was also like a compass that told me the direction of where over here is. And it was off to my left. So at first when it happened, my mind thought, I thought in my head, get out of here, that ain't real. And then it came on again and much stronger. Then it got serious. And I'm like, okay, this is something I never experienced. And there is something over there. There's got to be something over there. And I looked over there. And in the wood line, I could see some dark shapes. So I made a decision to get closer to it and at the same time you have to understand how the human mind works. My thoughts during that time was maybe it's my sixth sense and there's a female bear over there and maybe she has cubs because it's in the spring. And I certainly don't want to get mixed up with that because they could get really aggressive. But either way, my curiosity got the best of me and I started walking over in that direction. And as I did, I never looked straight over there. I just kept it in my peripheral. And I walked around. I stopped. I would look all over the place. I would bend over and pretend like I'm looking at stuff, pick stuff up off the ground. I was acting like I wasn't paying attention to them, but I'm trying to get closer to them. So as I kept getting closer, I could see something black, and I could see parts of it behind trees, and I could see that it's real and it's physical. And what I ended up doing was, while I was doing this, I was looking at the landscape of trees, and I wanted to find something unusual to pick out as a landmark so that I could come back later and find that landmark and then track what I was seeing. I want to see if there's tracks out there. And I found a row of trees, of birch trees that were perfect in a row. And I thought, okay, this is a good area. Because I've been back here a million times. I know the woods back there like the back of my hand. I know every wood, every tree, every landscape, brush, everything. The way it's supposed to be, it's been that way for years. So when I found this perfect landmark of trees in a row and this dark, what I thought may have been a bear in the back, I stopped. I pulled my cell phone out. I didn't hold it to my face and took a photo. I just pulled it up to my chest and I lined it up sideways to where I could take a picture and I took a photo. Then after I did that, I decided to walk back the same way I came into there. I meandered back, pretend like I still never seen them. I still kept them in my peripheral. What was there never moved. The entire time, I never felt fear, doom, dread, or terror. And then eventually I got out of there and I went back home and I downloaded the pic into my computer onto a big screen and I zoomed in on it. I could not believe that I seen a photo. I caught a photo of a dog man that was crouching down and you could see its knee bent out around the tree and you could see its head perfectly. And to the right of its head, its hand is on the side of a birch and you can see fingers, not a paw, with claws holding the side of the tree. And I was blown away when I saw that. And Robin, that's when I posted that picture up and you saw it and you were blown away at how detailed it was. And that's when we started talking and stuff, you know. But you kept looking in the photo and 10 feet away from the photo, about 4 feet up a tree, was a baby dog man's head poking around the tree looking straight at me.
Yep.
And I was blown away that you found that. I couldn't believe it. And so we believe that the dog man that I saw crouching down, and by the way, when she was crouching down, she was about 4.5 feet tall. So I would imagine her standing up would be around 8, 8.5, 9 feet tall. But I had this feeling that that was a female dog man.
Yeah.
So you were blown away by that photo evidence. And one thing to note is that the properties on the film, on the photo, date back in April. So in April, there's a young baby dog man, and it gives us an idea of the birthing cycles because I have another photo of one in June that was much smaller. So I can safely say from my photo evidence that they do have offspring from spring all the way halfway through summer so far from what I have photo evidence of. But either way, the story gets even much deeper, and this is really hard to wrap your head around. Next to the baby dog man back behind in the woods further is a big dog man that's male, and it's built like a bodybuilder. And then behind that is a Sasquatch that's even bigger. So this blows the doors off of Dogman Don't Hang Around Bigfoot, because Dogman and Bigfoot are in the same photo within a 15-foot spread in these sections of woods.
So yeah, I believe in certain places they don't, but for the most, I mean, I know more people that have them around them where they get along than people that don't. It really depends on the area and the groups. I mean, it goes back to being an individual thing. There's places where they won't be caught dead near each other, but I think it's more common that they share land.
You're right. Well, let's go deeper into this.
Exactly. Hey, you know what? Let me interrupt you just a second. Kyler has been sitting there quietly. And Kyler, do you have a question or a comment you'd like to make for Dark Woods?
Not really. I'm enjoying just listening to these stories. They're really cool.
Okay, great. Well, proceed ahead, Dark Woods.
Okay, so the photo was mind-blowing, and I couldn't believe how many cryptids, or forest people as I call them, were in the photo. Remember I mentioned that I made a landmark with the trees so that I could come back and track that out later on? So the next day, I went back out there to find that spot where the trees and everything were. And like I said, I know the woods back there like no tomorrow. I've been back there hundreds of times. When I went back there, I went to the same spot where I took that photo, and the trees and the things that were in the picture do not exist there in the woods. They're not there at all. So it tells me that photo of was a group of forest people in a section of woods that doesn't exist there, and that they and the section of woods were portaled into that area. There's some evidence that shows that, because in the forest picture that I have, there's weird faces on trees. There's faces like masks that are on the ground. There's a tree stump that has a nose, eyes, and a crazy-looking face. None of that is over there. That doesn't even exist. And Robin, when I talked to her about that, she told me that there was floating portals back here behind the house.
Yeah.
And then across the street where a lot of bad sounds I heard come from, is an anchored portal. And that's a portal that's permanent. And I believe the Sasquatch around here guard that portal, because anything can come through. And if it's something that's not, because I solely believe the Bigfoot up here keep bad things from coming through that area. They guard that portal. But I actually, this is incredible to even say, but I have a photo of three dogmen and the Bigfoot together in a group in a forest that doesn't exist behind my house that must have been portaled in because of the weird things that I find in the picture in the woods. Yeah, I know it's very hard to wrap your heads around, but that's the honest to God truth, and I have a photographic evidence of that.
Yeah, I believe it. I really do.
That sounds so interesting. It really does.
It gives you a glimpse, because I heard that the adjacent dimension to ours could look very similar to us. I seen a video once where a lady was going down a hiking trail, and she stepped through a portal. She was with friends, and all of a sudden her friends disappeared. And she could see the footprints of her friends where her footprints were, but they stopped and hers continued on. And she was lost. I watched this video all the way to the end. It's insane. So she kept walking down the trail, and there were lakes and areas, because they know this trail, there were lakes and areas that weren't there before. So she was stuck in a portal, and I'm not understanding how that all works as far as why there's differences on the other side of that reality. But eventually she found a road, and she must have been able to get out of that portal, and she found help at the nearest house. And then she was able to reunite with her friends, but they said that she was with them and she disappeared. So portals are real. Weird things like that do happen. And I've done enough, even NASA, I've researched it big time. NASA says that portals are real. I understand how the sun works with our magnetic field and how there's an electron diffusion range, X points they call it, from the energy of the sun blasting the earth, and it curves around the spherical part of the earth, and where it crisscrosses in the back, it creates these massive electron diffusion areas where portals, they claim, are there. And they got sworn satellites out there monitoring and trying to understand portals in that aspect in space. But there's portals all over the place here on Earth.
So, oh, yeah. I mean, I've watched my cats go into them. I had a German Shepherd at one time that went into one. I've watched things come out of portals.
You have a photo of a portal where there's a head coming out of it. I saw that.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's directly under a UFO. It was taken right outside my garage, and there's this huge open portal, and there's literally a head coming out of it. You can see the eyes, the nose, all of it. It's crazy. At one point, years ago, and this is back, we're talking, oh my goodness, how long ago? I want to say late 80s, early 90s. And I went out one night. The FTSE wanted me outside. I went outside, and it was like I was on a mission. Like, I literally knew where to go in the middle of the dark. I had two people that went with me because they were afraid I was walking around in the middle of the night by myself out in the dark. I went about 3 miles, and I literally ended up coming to this big thing, and I couldn't get in it, and they wanted me to come in it, and I said I couldn't, and they said, just put your hand on the bush. I put my hand on the bush, and it put me right through a portal, and I ended up where they were.
That's
crazy.
And I
would swear on that till the day I die. I mean, it was just incredible. You know, I know people that have been taken through portals. I know another person, somebody that a friend, a very dear friend of mine knew, where she put her hand, not knowing there was one there, she put her hand in it, and her hand completely disappeared. Then she pulled her hand back out, and her hand was back. But you look at a lot of these missing people cases, and this is not all of them by any means, but there is some percentage of them where people are literally walking around, and they go into a portal. You know, they don't know it's there. It's not like there's a neon sign. You've got portals that are anchored, which means that's just where they stay. You've got others that are temporary portals. You have some, I've seen one that floated across the yard. Pat, years ago, before we met, he saw one that looked like a black paper or a black plastic bag just hanging there. And the one I saw floating in the front yard had all kinds of pastel colorations in it. It looked like the sky at the top with stars in it. You know, I've watched the forest people wave their hand across the ground and watch it open up, and they jump in it. I had one that ran in front of my car, and he ran in front of the car, and there was this huge rock wall where they had cut through the rock to make the road. This is right up the road from my house. And he ran to that rock wall, and it just opened up like a portal, and he went right into it.
Wow.
You know, I mean, they're everywhere, you know.
Yep.
It's crazy, and it's not just as easy. Like, they've shown me how to open and close them, but it's really and truly not that simple. It's like if somebody were to go on one of your busiest expressways by your home and just shut it down. Can you imagine the travesty that would happen with all these vehicles?
Oh, yeah.
This is their expressway. So, I mean, there's some that obviously, you know, need to be closed down, but for the most part, you don't mess with them unless you're told to.
Yep. Now, I remember your description talking about what it's like to be in a portal. You're going, it's like a two-way road, two-lane road, one going and one coming. And when you're in you're cruising along real fast, and you can see entities going by. You can't interact with them.
I saw all sparkles. It looked like when you get dizzy, you know how you get sparkles in front of your face?
Mm-hmm.
When I did it, that's what it looked like. But you couldn't see where you were going. You couldn't see anything behind you. It was just this vast area, and then boom, I was there. And I wasn't in it very long. You know, years ago, one of the forest people that I'm excessively close with wanted me to go into this portal. And I said to him, I said, you know, before I do that, you know, I have children, I have grandchildren, you know, I can come back, right? And he was very honest, and he said, I can't promise that. They're not made for your body. You have a three-dimensional body, and this is not what, you know, your body is not made for these. So
that's true.
It's one of those things that you really should not do it. They can't, I mean, they know how to manipulate them. They know how to get where they want to go, and they know how to make it work so they can come back. We don't really have that ability. So it can be, you know, I don't ever encourage anybody to try to do it. I know a lot of people that have done it and survived, but then how many thousands of people disappear every year? And out of that, what small portion of those people have gone into portals with no way to get back?
That's true. You know, what's interesting is when you talked about the sparkles in your eyes, I know for a fact that there's a lot of research on a lot of different things that every astronaut that went out into space, they get those flickering, dancing lights in their eyes as well. And it's because the rod cones in their eyes, the energies that are outside our atmosphere, the solar, you know, photons from the sun and all that, get affected onto the rods of the eyes, and it creates little flashing sparks. So I would imagine it's a portal. Yeah. So in a portal, you're talking about a lot of energy. And you talked about those flashing deals. And another thing too is I've heard metallic warping sounds out back here in the woods, and there's no one, like I said, back here in the woods, and there's no metal back there. But I heard it several different times, and I've done a lot of armchair research, which is a good thing to do versus boots on the ground like I do as well. But when you do a lot of armchair research, you can find little gold nuggets of information from people. Because I've heard a lot of times people heard metal warping sounds or metal popping sounds, and all of a sudden they encounter a cryptid. And I believe those metal warping sounds is a sound of a portal opening or closing because of the energy that's used to do that. When you think about lightning, when it strikes and how it heats up the atmosphere, and then the air closes back real quick, there's a lot of energy that creates the thunder sound that you hear.
Yeah.
And to me, that's similar to how portals operate. There's a lot
we
of
get a
energy
lot of
involved.
We get a lot of them that sound like a generator.
Yeah,
and
you
and I
hold that a lot too.
Yeah. You know, and I've seen it, heard that noise, you know, a couple of times when the UFOs have been here, but most of the time when the UFOs are here, there's no sound. But I have heard that at the same time before.
That's interesting. It'd be hard for us to see UFOs because there's not much of a skylight with all the forest canopy, you know.
Yeah. Trust me, you're not missing anything.
Yeah, I've had my UFO experience when I was younger. That's enough for me.
Yeah. Yeah, they seem to like to follow us around.
Yeah, they do. And they like to mess with people as well. All those abductions and all the crazy things going on, it's insane.
Hey, my last abduction was May. I've been good that I know of since May. I had one time that it was questionable, but I didn't have any memory of anything. It just was a feeling I had. So I've been good since May, knock on wood.
Yeah,
but
knock on wood. Hopefully.
Yeah, Robin, we certainly hope that you're going to stay well and stay with us and not disappear into any portals. So we got about 10 minutes left. And I would like to ask in the following order, Robin, Kyler, and then myself to give Dark Woods one last question or thing to comment on. So, Robin, you get to go first.
No, I really don't have any questions because him and I talk all the time. I really applaud the way him and Primal Cry do this. They do it with respect. They do it with trust. And it's really paying off. And it just, again, solidifies what myself and many other people say. You want those positive experiences, not the negative. You know, I have the utmost respect for how they do things. I really do.
Thank you, Robin.
That
I
is
appreciate
great. And thank you on behalf of Dark Woods, because I always love it when we get good comments about our guests. So I wanted to say thank you very much, Robin, for saying those things to him. And I'm sure Dark Woods is just basking in the sunlight of compliments. Right, Dark Woods?
Yeah, well, I try not to let it get to my head. I would like to talk about something if I could squeeze it in real quick, because I think it's
sure
critical. Cool. So I'll make this real fast, and it's a shameless plug. I did a lot of podcast shows, and I did one on what's called An Impromptu Truth. And I do my shows out in the woods. I get a light bar set up and everything. So I do all my shows out there. We talk about the stuff I discover. During the show, a lot of people were seeing eyeshine in the background. And then later on, Permacry, because of all the interaction of people saying they're seeing stuff in the woods behind me, she came out and started taking random photos. I was sitting behind a face cord of wood near a fire ring, and there's nothing on the other side of the face cord of wood. And she ended up capturing a picture of a very tiny dog man that was climbing up the side of the face cord. And from that picture, you could see its head and its ears sticking out, and you could see one hand with claws grabbing the top of the piece of the wood on the very top of the face cord. And when I saw the photo, I looked at its eyes, and its eyes were way bigger than a normal. Because it was a baby, you would compare it to a puppy dog, like a canine. But a puppy dog's eyes would be pretty small, but these eyes were big. And what was weird was the eyes were black, and it looked soulless to me. And I couldn't understand why it looked like that. And then later on, from the different... No, it was a dog man. Later on, I found out from a different podcast show, this guy encountered a dog man, and he watched it. He was up close to this dog man, and he seen from the bottom eyelids a shield come up that was black, and it covered the entire eye. And that's what we caught on film or on a photo. And I also
saw the picture.
Yeah, and I also got another confirmation on that through the Nanoboss Continuum. G. Marty had a guest who talked about a Bigfoot doing the same thing with this black. You know how a shark bites down on something and they got that protective eyelid cover that comes up from the bottom? It's the same thing with Dogman, but it's black. Photo evidence of that. I didn't know what it was until I did my research and I heard from two different podcast shows the same thing between the Dogman and the Bigfoot, that these forest people have this black film that comes up over their eyes. And so
it's like a third eyelid.
Yes. And I had a 4-foot light bar that lit up the woods, and it was coming up over the face cord where it would be facing the light. So I think it had the black eyelids up to protect its eyes from that light. Now, when you think about this, when you're out, those eyelids could definitely be used for probably running through brush where you won't get scratches in your eyes, because I've seen a lot of deer eyeshine, or I've hunted and killed a lot of deer where you can see scratches in their eyes from brush and things. So I'd imagine that third eyelid, that black eyelid, protects their eyes from brush, it will also view from seeing eyeshine when they use that, because apparently they seem to be able to see through that eyelid. So if you're using a flashlight or whatever, you're not going to see eyeshine if they got those eyelids up. And I'll tell you what, I don't know of anybody else who has a photo where you can see those black eyelids that are up and in operation. And I very rarely hear about anyone talking about it. But that was this, when this baby dog man came up over the face cord, I was sitting a foot away from it. I didn't even know it was there. I kept hearing stuff behind me throughout the whole show, and I kept looking back and shining a flashlight. But he was a foot behind me. I didn't even realize it. So that's incredible information. And that's information that I haven't heard from anywhere else. So it's another piece of the puzzle that gives us a better understanding of how the dog people, the forest people and all that, what they're like and the abilities that they have.
Fantastic.
Wow, that is great. Well, thanks a lot. And I tell you, Kyler, we're going to give you the last word. What have you got to say or comment about tonight's show? Because it's been fun.
So before all this has happened, all these encounters, what was your belief with all this?
You know, Dogman didn't exist in my head. Bigfoot, everybody knew, you know, the name Bigfoot because of the Patty film and all that, but I didn't give it hardly any thought. I just knew about it. But once I moved up here, avalanche of things happening, and in a situation like this, you can't ignore what's going on. From the truck being smacked down, footprints that I got, the encounters, I've had a lot. We could talk for like 4 hours about encounters that I've had with these cryptids. But prior to 2019, zero idea of those. And now I do research. I listen to all kinds of podcast shows, 8 hours when I'm working. Then when I get home, I'm out in the woods. You know, it's just, I totally dove into it, and it's amazing. And I hope with the group that I had with the MindSpeak and contact from that female dogman, I hope soon in the future that my goal now, I'm up on another level. I want to be able to make contact with them. I think the best way to understand or know them is actually gain their trust, be able to communicate with them, be on good terms, and learn as much more as I can. Because I think that's the best avenue to learn.
Yeah, that'd be cool. With that being said, do you think they've been trying to contact you this whole time, even if you didn't believe or not?
You know, where I used to live, I don't think they would be as prevalent once I got up here, because they're all over up here. I think they made that move because when you think about it, there's a lot of researchers that do this for 40 years or more, old timers, and they got a lot of good information, but it took a lot of time to get the information, and they still haven't had the type of encounters that I have. As soon as I came up here and all this stuff started happening, it was what, 3 years that I've accumulated so much knowledge and I have so much evidence. If you don't mind me doing a shameless plug, I have a Facebook group account. Okay, cool. I have a Facebook group. It's called Primal Cry in the Dark Woods. If you submit an invite to that, I will get you in and you can see all my photo evidence and discussions that I have about this topic.
It's a good group.
Yeah, Robin's in there. She's my expert in the group.
Yeah, it's a good group. And the photos are amazing. And there's a nice group of people in there.
Yeah, the people are really great. No one's going to ridicule you. I keep it situated to where people can express themselves and their encounters freely without ridicule. Anyone that gets stupid, they're out of the group, you know. So either way, it's a good place to see all the photographic evidence and things that I discovered in the last 3 years. You know, I feel very blessed that I've had all these encounters and things occur in such a short period of time. And I did definitely my homework on researching and boots on the ground. Got a lot of tree structures. There's so many different things I'm getting into with all of this that it's just never ending.
It never really does it? I mean, it's just, it's wonderful stuff to talk about and experience. And I'm going to speak for Robin and for Kyler and for everybody else on ScaryCast. We love when we have Bigfoot experiencers because it's, Robin, don't you agree? It really is rewarding and a lot of fun.
It is. You know, it's fun, yes. It's rewarding, it's educational. It brings people together so that everybody can learn.
That's exactly right. Well, I'll tell you what, Dark Woods, we've really appreciated you being on here tonight. Will you come back again?
Heck yeah, and I really had a lot of fun being on here. It was a blast.
We want you to bring Primal Cry.
Yeah,
we need to get her on here. You know, I have to say this too. Primal Cry has been experiencing a lot of this stuff way before I came up here and way before I even got into forest people or paranormal or anything. So she's got a lot under her belt. If you thought my stuff
that's
was cool, you can imagine what hers is like.
Well, that's wonderful. We will have her too. So I wanted to say thanks to everybody. Thanks to again to Dr. Dennis Butala for giving me that recording that we had earlier on tonight. Thanks to Dark Woods. Thanks to the Queen of ScaryCast, Robin McRae. Thanks to Kyler Smith. We hope the Surgeon General of ScaryCast, Dr. Trey Dunaway, is okay with all that that shootout in and around his truck. So it's just good to be able to stay in touch with everyone. So thanks a lot. We'll see everybody next time, next week, our Christmas special on ScaryCast Podcast. We'll see everybody. Say goodbye.
Night.
All right.
Bye, guys.
Thanks a lot.